little something between you and me. Don't cost you nothing, this one's for free.
Madeline, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Very grateful to you for coming in to talk to us today. The reason that I've asked you to come and talk to us today is because we wanted to explore together what potentially might help you to manage your polycystic ovarian syndrome better.
Yeah.
And safer.
Yeah.
And we had a conversation before the last time we met about some of the hazards, but perhaps it would be helpful before we go into exploring what might help you at this stage, but perhaps we could talk about when you were first diagnosed,
yes,
how you came to be diagnosed, and probably what impact it has upon you as a person.
Yeah. So my periods started when I was 16, mm-hmm. And they're quite regular and normal. And at the age of 17, 18, they started to become less and less. Mm. So when I was 18, they were pretty much having one a year. So I went to the GP and they booked me to have an ultrasound scan. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was diagnosed with polycystic ovaries. Mm. So they said that I had lots of little, they're called follicles.
Yeah, that's right.
So fluid-filled sacs called follicles that surround the ovaries. Mm-hmm. So potentially if...
That's been really helpful so far. Perhaps you'd be comfortable to talk a little bit more about how else this has affected you. What you've described so far is those irregular periods and the fact that you've had an ultrasound scan.
Yeah.
And that ultrasound scan showed lots of little polycystic lesions in your ovaries, mm-hmm. Which is a suggestive, but not on its own. It doesn't confirm polycystic ovarian syndrome. So it probably was affecting you in other ways as well.
Yes. So at that point, I didn't really know much about polycystic ovaries. Mm. So after researching it, it sort of sprung to mind that I might not be able to have children in the future. And I think that's what affected me the most.
So the infrequency of your periods is linked to a reduced chance of getting pregnant. Yes. And that was obviously important to you. Yeah.
Yep. Because with polycystic ovaries, women suffer from higher levels of male hormone, testosterone. Mm-hmm. So how did that affect you? Because it can skip your periods, which means if you're not ovulating, then you're not releasing eggs.
Yeah.
And then there's other risks with polycystic ovaries, with not having frequent bleeds.
Mm. We'll go into the risks in a minute, if that's okay. But in terms of making the diagnosis of polycystic ovarian syndrome, was there anything else that you and the doctor discussed at that time that made you and the doctor think that this was polycystic ovarian syndrome? Had you noticed any changes in your body that would suggest that you might have more testosterone around? That might include hairiness?
Yes, excess hair.
And whereabouts was that hair, if you don't mind me asking?
On my legs.
Particularly on your legs, okay. What about your lower tummy or anywhere else?
Not too bad, no.
Not particularly? Okay.
No, I don't suffer from that.
So sometimes that might not be enough on its own to suggest that. So sometimes we have to do a blood test. Mm-hmm. And we do hormones, the LH and FSH blood tests. And that can sometimes give us a better indication as to whether you've got polycystic ovarian syndrome or not. Okay. All right. Well, by one route or another, you got to a diagnosis of polycystic ovarian syndrome. So we've had another look at your records and found out a little bit more information. You ended up having a third ultrasound scan, and that third ultrasound scan, we believe, demonstrated that you had multiple cysts consistent with polycystic ovarian syndrome. You also had a couple of additional investigations done at the same time. One which confirmed that your testosterone levels were normal and your prolactin level was normal, which is very reassuring. And we also compared your hormone levels of FSH and LH, and your ratio of LH divided by FSH was about 2.5, almost 3, which some people would also say is probably consistent with polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Yeah.
So you've got lack of periods.
Yeah.
You've got probably on ultrasound scan lots of cysts, which would be consistent with polycystic ovarian syndrome. And your FSH LH ratio would also be consistent with a diagnosis of polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Yeah.
So I think let's treat you as if you've got polycystic ovarian syndrome,
yeah,
and let's talk some more about what we can do to try and keep your risks to a minimum of all of those, the yeah, issues that you've got. Shall we go through those in turn?
Yes.
Perhaps we could start with the things that are most important to you.
Yeah.
You mentioned before that you were quite keen to get pregnant.
Yeah.
And your lack of periods and the presence of polycystic ovarian syndrome was a big problem to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we need to take into account, are you currently trying to have a family?
I already have a son.
Yeah.
Yeah, a present.
Yeah.
Within the next 2 years, I would like to try.
So clearly you're fertile.
Yeah.
Clearly you're able to conceive.
Yeah.
It's just your chances of conceiving spontaneously are slightly less than the yes, next person.
Yeah.
But clearly we know that you are producing healthy eggs yes, that produce a good result, and yeah, that's a pregnancy, a yeah, healthy pregnancy at that. So that's really helpful to know.
Yeah.
So at the moment, you're not particularly trying?
No.
No, okay. No. So shall we go as far as to say as you'd like to be taking precautions against getting pregnant? Because that's an important step in terms of you and me deciding together what treatment options might be best for you.
So I'm not particularly trying, but I don't want to stop it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So you don't want to stop. The reason I'm trying to pin yeah, you down on this
yeah,
it is that some of the treatments that we can give you
mm-hmm,
might get in the way of you conceiving.
Yeah.
Now, I know that you're yeah, not particularly trying, but
no,
because it's difficult for you to conceive or more yeah, difficult than the next person to conceive, yeah, you might say, okay, well, I'm happy to take the chance. I'm happy either to use barrier contraception for yeah, the meantime.
Yeah.
Or I'm happy just to say, well, if it happens, it happens.
Yeah.
And I know that you're not trying, but
yes,
those are a couple of your options that you yes, might want to consider. Okay, so we'll bear that in mind when yes, you come to your final decisions about what we're going to do today at the end of the consultation.
Yep.
Okay. Shall we go through in more detail about some of the risks of polycystic ovarian yes, syndrome? What do you already know?
So if you're not having periods regularly, there is a risk of the lining of the uterus thickens.
Yeah,
it can
right,
thicken, and sometimes cancer can grow in there. So you are at high risk of endometrial cancer
yeah,
with polycystic ovaries. Also in pregnancy, you are slightly at high risk of miscarriage.
That's correct.
Because the fetus could grow on to a follicle rather than in the uterus.
You're thinking about the slightly higher risk of having an ectopic pregnancy, yes, so pregnancy so, where it's so not meant to be.
Not
so,
in the right place.
So it's yeah, really important that when you do get pregnant, if you feel unwell, particularly with severe lower tummy pain,
yeah,
that you don't ignore those symptoms and that we see you straight away to confirm, number one, that you've got a pregnancy, and number two, that it's in the right place.
Yeah.
So that's something that's important for you to
yes,
to work out with us at the time. Okay.
Yep.
We're going to go into a bit more detail about that risk of endometrial cancer.
Right.
So it is yep, a real risk.
Yeah.
And if we don't do anything, your lifetime risk as somebody who's just been diagnosed as having polycystic ovarian syndrome is 9%.
Yeah.
So that still means that 91% of women who have polycystic ovarian syndrome confirmed won't have
yes,
in their lifetime ovarian cancer, because it's a relatively rare sort of cancer.
Yeah.
But we want to keep that risk down to yes, a minimum.
Yeah.
Theoretically, if we can give you 4 periods per year, yeah, that will protect the lining of your womb from going on to produce endometrial cancer.
Okay.
But we can also protect the lining of your womb from getting endometrial cancer by other methods too, and those are usually involving a little bit of progestogen.
Yeah.
So we perhaps talk about some of the methods that we could go into.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about those already?
So the progesterone you take every few months.
Yeah. So yeah, we could give you one of 2 different sorts of progestogen.
Yeah.
And those 2 different sorts of progestogen, we'd usually give them once every 3 months,
yeah,
for example. And we would give you either the standard treatment, which is medroxyprogesterone, 10 milligrams daily, and you'd normally take that for 12 to 14 days.
Right.
during which time you'd normally have what's called a withdrawal bleed, with the assumption that you've got estrogen in your system that's causing the lining of your womb to grow anyway. So you usually get a bleed within 3 to 7 days of starting the medroxyprogestogen. So just take it for that period of time, and usually you're going to get shedding of the lining of your womb and a period, or something like a period, at that sort of time. For those women that medroxyprogestogen gives side effects, or for those women that prefer to have something slightly more modern, there is an alternative progestogen called micronized progesterone. A brand of that would be Uterogestan. And that dose would be usually 100 milligrams daily for a couple of weeks.
Right.
Again, during that period of time, we would normally find that you'd have a withdrawal bleed. So those are the two possibilities of something just to take as and when. Now, particularly since you potentially might want to conceive, those would be good choices for you, because they wouldn't interfere with you conceiving. And if you already had a baby, they probably wouldn't cause any harm to the baby. But if you had symptoms that made you think you might be pregnant, before we'd give you that treatment, we'd do a pregnancy test to confirm that you're not pregnant.
Yeah.
Does that all make sense?
Yes.
All right. Have you heard of any alternative methods to protect the womb beyond that?
So you could take the pill?
Yeah, absolutely. And what might be the problems of the pill?
For me, it's because I'm sensitive to estrogen, so they make me nauseous from it.
Because some people, as you say, get side effects.
Yeah.
Some people find that their migraines get a lot worse.
Yes.
And you don't suffer with migraines yourself?
No.
So if you had migraines and they got a lot worse, it probably would be sensible to be stopping that, because that might be linked with a slightly higher risk of having a stroke clot.
Okay. Yeah.
So that would be worthwhile avoiding if that happened. It's worthwhile me asking at this stage if you have any family history of clots in your legs or your lungs.
No.
No. Okay. No. So there is a slightly increased risk of clots in legs or lungs.
Yeah.
And that, the combined pill, puts your risk up to about 15 per 10,000 women years. So if you were to take, if 10,000 women were to take the combined pill for a year, 15 extra women would end up having a clot as a result of being on the pill. So there's a risk there.
Yeah.
There's a slightly higher risk. It's worthwhile just giving a rough idea of what the normal risk is of ovarian cancer.
Yeah.
So for women that don't have polycystic ovarian syndrome, their background risk over a lifetime is 1.5%. So in 100 women over a lifetime, only 1.5 of those women would end up with ovarian cancer if they don't have polycystic ovarian syndrome. So that's the risk that we're trying to bring you back down to by thinking about protecting the lining of your womb with these options. Have you come across any other choices? You may not have done, particularly since you're potentially wanting to get pregnant too.
Yeah.
So one of the other options for women that don't want to get pregnant and can't go on the combined pill, or the combined pill is not the option that they prefer, one of the other options could be that they have an intrauterine system that releases progestogen that protects the lining of the womb. So the Mirena coil would be such a system.
Yeah.
Okay. And that would normally be licensed for a period of several years. So it's worthwhile talking about how long the intrauterine system would stay in place.
Yeah.
And it's very specific how long the license is for Mirena for endometrial protection. So it's different from what it would be for contraception.
Yeah.
So for endometrial protection, you need to have that Mirena coil changed every 4 years to give you adequate endometrial protection. All right. If you were to have that, you might find that your periods would stop altogether, and you might find that you had irregular periods. So it's unpredictable when it comes to your periods, but the periods aren't so important, apart from the fact that they can be quite disruptive to your lifestyle.
Yeah.
But the periods, or the bleeding pattern that you're likely to have, would be likely to not be there at all, no bleeding at all, or that you'd have light, irregular bleeding, which might not be quite so disruptive to you. So that's something to think about for the future, possibly after you finished having children.
Yeah.
So that might be an easier method of protecting the lining of your womb when you come to that. Okay. There are a couple of other things that I'd like to talk about, but before I go on to talk to you about them, was there anything else that you wanted to talk about regarding what polycystic ovarian syndrome means to you? Not really. So no. you're shaking your head
no,
there.
Not
I'm guessing that's not. So with your permission, I'm going to talk about things that could be important to someone else.
Yes, okay, that's fine.
If that's all right. The first thing to say is that polycystic ovarian syndrome is often linked to being of a high body mass index. And we talked about your body mass index at diagnosis was about 19.
Yeah.
So certainly not consistent with being overweight in the slightest. In fact, if anything, it was slightly underweight at that time. But we didn't think it was unhealthily underweight and it wasn't a drop in body weight. It was just because that was your weight at the time.
Yeah.
And you didn't have any problems related to eating at all.
No.
Or your own body image or anything like that.
No.
So you're comfortable like that.
Yeah.
And you never felt uncomfortably full and needed to make yourself sick.
No.
And exercise wasn't something...
It was quite regular at the
quite
time.
Quite regular.
Yes.
Perhaps we could explore that a little bit if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah. So I used to do exercise about 4 or 5 times a week.
Okay.
And eating very healthily.
So eating healthily and good... good variety of food.
Yeah.
But the exercise might have been something that at that time could have influenced the lack of periods.
Yeah.
How has that progressed from the age of 19? Because you're now, how old?
Nearly 26.
Nearly 26. So there's been 7 years that have passed since then.
So I'm at a much heavier weight now. Mm. It's not my happy weight, but I actually struggle to lose it since having my child. But I am eating healthier now. I'm on a healthy eating plan and trying to do more exercise, but I don't quite do as much as what I used to do exercise. It's finding the time.
Do you mind me asking you how much you weigh at the moment?
12 and a half stone currently.
Okay. And have you got any idea what your body mass index is at this time?
Maybe 27.
Okay.
That's it.
So only slightly overweight, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
So, and that's...
Yeah.
How old is your child now?
Two,
okay. Yeah. So that's something that we could perhaps come back to. And in fact, I can signpost you to a resource that we've got on realgeneralpractice.org about options for exploring losing weight.
Yeah.
So maybe you could listen to that and then come back to me and then we could decide together what would work for you.
Yeah.
And we could talk about that on a telephone call if you'd like.
That's...
Okay. For other people, so being overweight or obese, so obesity is defined as a body mass index of 30 or above.
Yeah.
So you're certainly not that at all, and you're only just above your ideal weight.
Yeah.
Is linked in with polycystic ovarian syndrome, so it's more likely to happen under those circumstances.
Yeah.
Not only that if you are overweight, your periods are going to be less frequent too.
Yeah.
So if conceiving was important to you, then there is a suggestion that losing weight will make your periods happen more frequently.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah.
To lose weight before I try and conceive again.
And theoretically, that would help you be more likely to conceive. So I think we do need to come back to this weight issue because that's important to you.
Yeah.
About the way you feel. You mentioned your happy weight.
Yeah.
So what would be your happy weight?
10 and a half stone.
Okay. So you're aiming for a body mass index of about 24, 25.
Yeah. That's what I was pre-pregnancy.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, that's helpful to know. That weight loss also gives you protection against type 2 diabetes. Have you heard of that at all?
Yes, type 2 diabetes.
So we've already tested you. Number one, you don't have any symptoms. If you wouldn't mind me checking you out, do you have any symptoms that might be consistent with diabetes, which could be thirst, peeing a lot, weight changes, or tiredness, or any of those?
No.
You're not thinking that?
No.
But I know that we've reviewed your blood tests recently, and we found that your average blood sugar was normal, and again, that means that you don't have type 2 diabetes.
Yeah.
But if you are overweight or obese, then it's worthwhile checking you for type 2 diabetes because it's linked in with polycystic ovarian syndrome. So it's worthwhile being aware of that link as well. In fact, we quite commonly offer a medication to help with overweight people with polycystic ovarian syndrome, but the evidence is poor in its use.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a little bit more about it. So metformin is a medication which is very safe and metabolic, is very good, and it's very protective to people with type 2 diabetes. It protects them. You know, not only does it bring their sugar levels down, but it gives them protection for their heart and protects them from heart attacks and strokes. So it's really worthwhile doing for somebody who's got type 2 diabetes. There's also evidence that taking metformin protects you against type 2 diabetes, so it might be worthwhile for that reason.
Yeah.
But there's also evidence that it makes your periods happen more frequently. But on the downside, there's no evidence that it results in more healthy pregnancies.
Okay. Yeah.
So I don't want to put your hopes up and suggest that we could make your periods happen more frequently with metformin without knowing that it's going to result in healthy pregnancies. Yeah. So the evidence base is poor when it comes to using metformin in this situation, I'm afraid. Okay. Now, we mentioned a little bit about some of the features of polycystic ovarian syndrome, and you have some of them, but not enough in terms of hairiness.
Yeah.
You mentioned before that you tend to have quite hairy legs,
but
you're not affected by hair elsewhere, particularly in your lower tummy on your chin or anything, and you're not affected by acne.
No.
If it's okay, it would be helpful for me to explore with you what options would work for other people who were hairy and wanted to explore what they could do to try and reduce that hairiness. So I'm going to go into the evidence for that, if that's okay. Right. Most people are comfortable. If we look at the pros and cons table that we've got in front of here, when it comes to hairiness, we're going to go through these options and decide whether, if you were more affected by hairiness, whether there'd be options that you would want to explore.
Yeah.
Okay. So imagine that you're hair is more of a problem. Maybe you've got some on your chin, maybe you've got some on your lower tummy, and the hairiness on your legs is more of an issue too. Yeah. So the top measure is safe and low cost, and those are just simple cosmetic options.
Yeah.
So bleaching with lemon juice or plucking, waxing. They're all unlikely to cause serious harm. Occasionally they can irritate the hair follicles, particularly with the plucking and the waxing. So that's worthwhile just bearing in mind a bit as well. Have you heard of any other options? Or looking down this list that we got in front of us, is there anything that might potentially interest you from those options? These are things that you haven't come across before.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there is a cream that's prescribable by your doctor. It's called eflornithine. It's a cream, and it gives some very temporary benefit with facial hairiness, but it gives no permanent help at all, unfortunately. And unfortunately, there's lots of doctors that won't prescribe it because the rules from their clinical governance groups won't allow them to prescribe it. So you can buy it, you can get it on a private prescription, but you won't be able to get an NHS prescription in most places these days, unfortunately, for that, because it doesn't give any long-term benefit. It's probably relatively safe, unless you're pregnant. I wouldn't encourage you using it when you're pregnant. It's probably relatively safe, but it only gives temporary benefit. We'll come back to metformin. We did mention metformin before, because metformin did hold a little bit of promise in terms of protecting and preventing type 2 diabetes and possibly helping manage weight, because it can make you slightly nauseated and slightly, it can affect your appetite.
Okay.
So that can sometimes make it a little bit easier for you to lose weight if that's something that's important to you. But that nausea, if you go too fast and too high with the dosing, can sometimes cause people to stop the medication because of the side effects. And it can occasionally make your tummy a bit looser.
Yeah.
And cramping and diarrhea can be a problem with higher doses. So you'd probably want to stick to a relatively low dose.
Yeah.
So as well as the benefits in type 2 diabetes and weight, it probably has a benefit for hairiness too. So if we were to take 100 women and treat them with metformin over the course of 6 months, we'd find after that 6 months, we'd probably find about 19 or 20% of women would have significant benefit when it comes to hairiness, which might be worthwhile. And obviously, we've talked a little bit about it helping your periods become a little bit more frequent, yeah, potentially, and giving you protection against heart attacks and strokes. But that's probably not worthwhile unless your risk of heart attacks and strokes is, yes, significant. And we've talked a bit about side effects already, so we'll leave that for the time being. There are combined pills. Now, we talked about the pros and cons of combined pills and the safety of combined pills. So if we assumed it was relatively safe for you to be on a combined pill, then we could put you on a combined pill that also has anti-androgen effects. Now, androgen and testosterone are very similar.
Yeah.
And if we block the androgenic symptoms, then we make it the testosterone in your body, or your sensitivity to the small doses of testosterone that are in your body, less of a problem. So they can have also an appreciable benefit in terms of cutting down your hairiness. So after 6 months being on a combined pill like Yasmin or Dianette, you'll get between 27% and 36% of women would find a significant benefit, mm-hmm, over the course of 6 months. But there is that increased risk of clots in the legs and lungs. And for those two particular pills, their risk is quite high. So the background risk is about 5 women in 10,000.
Okay.
So for 10,000 years of treatment, then we get 5 people as a background risk of having a clot. Whereas if we give all 10,000 women this particular combined pill, so either Yasmin or Dianette, then their risk goes up to 35. So 35, okay, of those women in 10,000 would get a clot over that 1 year period of taking those treatments. Just for completeness, we're also going to mention a couple of other products which can also cause considerable side effects or problems. So we don't normally recommend those unless there's a really good indication, yeah, for it. So there is a medication called spironolactone. Again, that can cause considerable benefit, but still it's only 38% of women will find benefit at 6 months.
Yeah.
And it can cause confusion, cramps, dizziness, can affect your potassium levels. And it does mean that you'd have to have a blood test on a regular basis, yeah, as well. So that might not appeal to many women, but it's a possibility. And after you've gone through the change, some women would want to consider the use of a tablet called finasteride. And finasteride, again, has considerable side effects. Potentially it can cause fatigue, weight gain, loss of libido, and it only gives benefit to 32 women in 100 after 6 months. So it's something to keep on the back burner. It's there, but the evidence isn't great that, yeah, the benefits outweigh the risk with that particular preparation. We're going to sum up what you've taken away from this discussion at this time, and it'd be quite powerful perhaps if you could just give me an idea of what you would like to do in the future.
Yeah, so I think I'd like to try the progesterone. Yes,
that's, yeah, okay, one. So you have a choice of progestogens. We talked about the normal first line treatment would, yeah, be a preparation called medroxyprogesterone,
yeah,
so you'd like to use that, yes, for the moment, okay, because, mm-hmm, there is an alternative if that does cause symptoms and side effects. So the side effects you're particularly looking out for with medroxyprogesterone could be potentially acne, which is unlikely. Could be fluid retention, so a little bit of ankle swelling. But it can cause some other skin changes as well. So those would be the main side effects. And some people find that it makes them feel a bit premenstrual.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Has that been a problem to you before?
No.
No, okay. No. So the chances are you'll have no problems with them whatsoever, and they seem to be safe. But they can cause nuisance side effects, so it's, okay, worthwhile just being aware of that. So we'll go ahead with that. We'll try it out.
Yeah.
If you're finding that it's not causing you to have a withdrawal bleed, think about whether you could be pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's persistently not causing you to have a withdrawal bleed, then get back in touch with me and we'll explore other options, yes, for you. Does that all make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you want to explore any of the other options at this stage? You mentioned to me before that after you've completed your family, you're thinking about having the Mirena coil,
yes,
to protect the lining of your womb,
yeah,
and then you would have to have that changed every 4 years,
yes,
for this indication.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Is anything else that you like the sound of?
No.
Not really, because nothing else really affects you.
No.
So that's fine. So I know that you and me are going to have a future consultation about your weight at some stage. Probably the appropriate way of doing that is if you go onto realgeneralpractice.org and type in how to lose weight, and then you listen to me and another patient talking about the options of what might work and the evidence behind each of those options. And then you look at a similar pros and cons table on one sheet that's also on the website. If you look at that pros and cons table, it will summarise the options that you have available to you. And you might need assistance from me, or you might decide that you want to explore things through one of my nurses or someone else, just to help you with whatever's necessary to do that job.
Okay.
So that all makes sense. Do you want anything clarifying at this stage?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Let's hear it for our GP. Skills improving, risk removing, no confusion.